Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
That's right. This is Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. And I am your Kansas City Chiefs superfan. And I am glad that already, seems anyway, that I may have brought another proud soul into the Chiefs kingdom. Chicago Tom here and I were talking to a St. Louis fan who feels bereft without a team and apparently has decided he wants to join the Chiefs. Tom was trying to pull him into the, you know, into the valley of sadness that is being a Chicago fan for some reason, but I think we've kept him on the line of the Chiefs, and that alone I am happy about. So without further ado, first off, I want to introduce my other super fans here. We're going to be breaking down all the week one preseason action, talking about the input we've gotten from our other super fans and what we saw ourselves. Without further ado, I should mention here I am joined by our lovely Chicago Tom. How's it going, Tom?
How's it going, Nick? I just want to say I'm really sorry for that new Kansas City fan. He could have joined the wave and gotten onto the Chicago Bears while they were still down, and he could have got in on the ground floor. And now, you know, he's going to just join a winner while they're on top, and he'll have to say he was a bandwagon jumper the rest of his fandom, probably.
It is true. You cannot accuse Chicago Bears fans of being bandwagoners right now. So that's why we're proud of you, Tom.
I'm proud of me, too.
Well, speaking of bandwagoners, we're also joined by my nemesis, the Oakland Raiders superfan, Monty, who everybody thinks has bought their way into a division championship and possibly further into the playoffs. And how are you, Monty?
Yeah, tell your friend there's plenty of room on the bandwagon. Jump into the Raiders kingdom. I mean, just embrace the dark side. This is the year. It's been a long drought for 13 years, so it'll feel good to come to the dark side. There's still time.
I will not be telling this person this, but I appreciate your efforts.
I'll tweet at him with a link to the podcast. He'll come on board.
All right, we will see. By the way, we're going to run back to this at the end of the pod, but the whole podcast, you can find all of us by just tweeting at NFU Podcast on Twitter. I am at Clayton Nicholas for all your chief stuff, and all of you St. Louis defectors, you know, please get in touch with me, and I will give you 1,000 reasons more than you actually want about why you should become a Chiefs fan. You can find Monty at, I believe, Montsadius on Twitter.
That's correct.
Is that right?
That is correct.
And you can find Chicago Tom at Bearing the News, correct?
Correct. Thank you.
Yeah, we've been doing this a long time. I have your Twitter handles memorized. All right, well, without further ado, let's get into these games. I mean, obviously, it's preseason week one, so there's only so much we can really derive from the spectacle that is watching starters run through one scripted set and then a whole bunch of backup guys playing out for a couple of quarters, and then a bunch of guys who are not going to be playing football in about a month, finishing out the fourth quarter. But the first game on our slate here was Washington and the Atlanta Falcons. And Monty, you were taking a look at this game.
I think the first thing that jumps out is the Eagles' starting offense did not look very good. Matt Ryan went 0-4. I think Tim is still hiding after catching a part of this game. He hasn't really chimed in here that he's got a girlfriend now, so he might be folding laundry and cooking romantic dinners. He didn't get a chance to watch the game. But from what I can tell, there's not much to watch from the Falcons' side of the field. Neil stopped watching the Olympics long enough to watch a little Washington football. He said Captain Cook looks like a vet. He liked the way he looked, efficient, strong, confident. He thought the defense looked great. Obviously, they shut down the starting offense of the Falcons. He called out, is it Suah Craven? Suah Cravens played at inside linebacker, was all over the field, had a couple of plays for a loss. He said pretty impressive, other than the fact that the Washington cannot run the ball. Couldn't find their way through a wet paper bag. It's awful, and he's pretty much ready to call call the season right now after one series of preseason week one. He's ready to throw in the towel based on what he saw from the run game.
So it sounds like we learned nothing from this game. Kirk can look good for a series or so, for five passes anyway. And Washington has huge question marks at running back. While it is surprising, though, that the Falcons were so ineffective with their starting offense. I'm sure that's something that you will be hearing our Falcons superfan Tim, once he emerges from his slumber or romantic occasion, he'll be sounding off about that, without a doubt. But for our next game, we're actually going back to you, Monty. It's a double feature of Mont Sadius here, with Tampa Bay at Philadelphia. So we have two young quarterbacks. I'm sure there are a lot of eyes on this game just for that fact. But what did you see in this?
I think the big takeaway from this game is that the first-round pick that the Philadelphia Eagles made that big move for on draft day ended up leaving the game with cracked ribs. And I know that they're not, expected to set the world on fire or anything this year, but cracked ribs probably could linger for a while, which means it's going to cost him reps in preseason, which means it's just going to stunt his development. So the biggest takeaway from that is it's just like the worst case scenario, the last thing you want to see. Our old pal from the Next Fan Up podcast, Mark Sitko, had told me that Ryan Matthews was going to have a good year. He actually had a nice little 5-yard touchdown run. And then from the Tampa Bay side of the ball, it's the biggest takeaway was their kicker, who they traded up to get, who had, pretty consistent in college, actually missed his first extra point attempt in the NFL. So I'm sure Twitter went crazy when that happened.
Well, I'm certainly pleased that, the Buccaneers traded up to us in the second round, giving us, a fair amount of extra draft capital so that they could get a second round kicker that can't kick field goals.
That injury at quarterback is kind of a serious issue. You don't draft a quarterback that high to sit him on the bench. And Sam Bradford's never going to be anything to brag about. I think the hope up there was, they'd have a new starter by game 5 or 6. And if he misses the entire preseason, got a lot to learn. That may not happen. That's really too bad for Carson Wentz. That's really a setback for them. I watched a little bit of this game as well. I thought Tampa Bay was kind of sloppy. Not really the way you want to look with a new head coach. I'm used to the opposite happening. A lot of the times teams will come out and actually look sharper than usual, because it just seems like everybody's job is on the line and you've got a new head coach who isn't really married to anybody. I know he was the offensive coordinator last year, but it's still a change in regime. And I was a little disappointed that they didn't play a little bit better than they did. They're going to have to pick it up. It's only the first preseason game, but they're not looking at a great year if they keep playing like that.
Yeah, looking at the box score, Jameis was pretty efficient. 7 for 9, had a touchdown. The other name that kind of jumps out, and I know he's familiar with Doug Peterson's system, also first-time head coach out in Philadelphia, is Chase Daniels. I know you're familiar with him, Nick, but he actually ran in a touchdown, I believe. And he didn't have the best day other than that, but I would think that if Carson struggles with all the money that the Philadelphia has spent on that position in this offseason, it's not going to be the main reason that, it's going to slow him down. They've got definitely some pieces at quarterback that they can play around with. But
yeah, Chase Daniel was wildly inaccurate. He was throwing everything over everybody's heads for quite a little while before he settled down. I hope that's not going to be typical for him. He did not have a good day throwing the ball. And I agree with the Jameis Winston comment. I thought he was throwing with anticipation, really like a veteran. Guy's in his second year, but I thought he really looked good.
Well, and then next up is back to you, Tom, where we had the Carolina Panthers facing off against the Baltimore Ravens. And obviously, the main question we all wanted to know here was, are the Baltimore Ravens backups better than the Carolina Panthers backups? And we answered that.
I decided not to focus on the backups too much in talking about this game and in watching it. I think if you're a Carolina fan, I think you're pretty happy right now, just because the team came out and looked pretty sharp on offense. Cam Newton had a 68-yard drive. He was only in for one series. He looked pretty good. He doesn't look like he's lost anything in the offseason, and I think really that and everybody staying healthy is what you're looking for there. For the Ravens, what stood out to me was Terrence West. He's a guy that I've been hearing quite a bit about coming out of Baltimore camp. They held Justin Forsett out of this game. So the other running backs saw quite a bit of time. And West really kind of lived up to the hype. He's really got some power. He's explosive. He's got good footwork. That may turn out to be a real thing. Guy really, frankly, I thought was, I mean, he came out of nowhere as far as I was concerned. Really didn't know anything about him before camp started. But I've been hearing good things. Kenneth Dixon also ran the ball really well for them.
I'm scrolling through the box score right now, and it does not look like Kelvin Benjamin played. Is that correct?
He did not. Bringing him
along pretty slowly?
Yeah, apparently so.
That's smart. I've been reading up on him, and it sounds like he's on pace, whatever their projected timetable was. He seems to be right on pace, and everyone's optimistic. But I'll be curious to see when he gets back out on the field and if he's ready to go.
Yeah, they're going to need him, no doubt about it.
All right, well, Monty, you took a look at the Saints at the Patriots. And so what did we see there? I mean, we've been hearing, we had a special camp report from Pod and Pod Jr., Soda Pop, saying that the Saints were really outplaying the Patriots in camp and in their, their one-on-one practices. Did that carry over into the game?
Well, the Patriots ended up winning the game, so I don't know how much stock we can get out of the Pod Vader training camp update, but based on what Sitko is writing about his team and what Pod is saying, they're all completely confident. I mean, Garoppolo's inexperienced, but he's still got he's still got a control of the offense. He's been there for a couple of years. A couple of things that jumped out from Patrick's perspective is, definitely all eyes are kind of on Jimmy Garoppolo as he's going to step up for these first four games. He says he's got the talent, but he just needs to, get some more reps. Patrick was really impressed with Malcolm Mitchell, says he's way better than he thought he would be at this point. On the other side of the ball, Chris, the super fan, was pretty impressed with the defense. So I know that the Saints had a rough defense last year, so maybe just any improvement is starting, is enough to get Chris excited. Michael Thomas, by all reports, the hype is real. He thinks that him and Drew Brees have got a pretty good chemistry going right off the bat, and he's expecting them to have a pretty good year. Unless Drew Brees falls off a cliff similar to Peyton Manning did last year, he's expecting the Saints offense to be kind of humming and, not to miss a beat. And then he's expecting the defense to be much improved. So it should be, an interesting year for the New Orleans Saints.
It was Malcolm Mitchell who dislocated his elbow. It looks like Patrick thinks he might go on IR just because there are so many guys ahead of him. It might be an excuse to stash him away.
Oh, like the designated to return move? Sure.
Correct.
Which is not cheating, Nick. Don't worry. That is totally acceptable under the letter of the law.
Well, I'm not one of the ones that gets most worried about those things, but I do think one thing that the Patriots have to be feeling good about after this game is that their quarterback was going to be starting the first four games of the year, had a pretty good outing. Jimmy Garoppolo ended up with going 11 of 18 for 168 yards. No touchdowns, but, I mean, that's a fairly respectable outing. And Jacoby Brissett, their other quarterback on the roster they drafted this year, he went 7 of 13 for 63. So, respectable numbers there. And obviously they got a good long look at Garoppolo. So, It is interesting that they're not playing Tom in any snaps in the preseason, but I think that's also wise. Well, we'll see. I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll be on the field just to thumb his nose at Goodell and everybody else in later preseason games.
Let's hope so.
I would hope so as well. Well, and so we now move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars at the New York Jets. I was watching this game, and it was interesting. I mean, I was curious because I wanted to see how all of Jacksonville's pieces are now being put back, put together. They're a team that has been, I mean, I think everybody's sort of given them a lot of benefit of the doubt and really feeling like they've been on the right track for several years. It hasn't equated to a whole lot of wins in the last couple of seasons. But they made, it even more acquisitions in the free agent market this year that I think people were high on, even though it did seem like they overpaid at a lot of positions. Either way, so I was curious about this team, and, they put on a show offensively. I mean, this is not a surprise to anybody who has any Jaguars on their fantasy teams over the last year or two, but Blake Bortles and the Allens, they have a great connection, particularly Allen Robinson. He just put on a clinic. They went up 10-0 in the first quarter, they seem to be in good control. Chris Ivory, who I think a lot of people thought got, drastically overpaid, I mean, he actually looked really good. So did T.J. Yeldon. It looks like they're going to have a running game, if nothing else, and that's going to balance out that pass attack. But there wasn't a whole lot of signs, despite the fact that they did shut out the Jets in the first quarter. There's still a lot of signs that their defense is going to be giving up a lot of ground, despite all the acquisitions. Ryan Fitzpatrick looked pretty good. He only threw 4 passes, but completed 3 of them for 72 yards, which is a 18 yard per attempt go of it. Not bad at all. Geno was Geno, and he had an okay game. I think the main takeaways from Andrew, our Jets superfan, were that the wide receivers looked good. Anunua, who's a young guy, he took a step forward and looks like he's going to be good. And it looks like they got two gems in Sherrone Peak and Jalen Marshall, he says. He said the negatives were the secondary, as I mentioned. Allen Robinson, he says, is unguardable. But he says he still would have liked to see more from D. Milliner, who's been struggling to play the ball, basically since he was drafted very high. And I believe the Jets even traded up to get him relatively high in the first round. So as we heard from Andrew before this game, he may be on his, this may be the last stand of D. Milliner, at least for the Jets.
I remember when they traded up for him, they were kind of hoping he would fill in where Revis left off. So I know man-to-man is definitely one of the toughest jobs in the league. So, I mean, maybe they're just not using him correctly, or maybe he's just not falling into that particular role. But, so I was pulling for a guy who gets picked that high. You're kind of hoping they can figure it out and make some. But as far as the Jaguars shutting out the Jets right off the bat, this is essentially like their first, Fitzpatrick's first couple practices. He just kind of got on the scene. He's probably, still trying to find out where all of his equipment is, getting stretched out, ready to go. He's just getting started.
That is true. Well, another team that unfortunately looked like it was just getting started was the Chicago Bears. And I'm going to toss this over to you, Tom, but I watched, the first thing I watched was the first, it was basically all the starting time of all of my division rivals. And so I did have a chance to watch this. So I'll just give you my quick thoughts. I mean, we were sort of hoping to see disarray and chaos with the Broncos quarterbacks, but we didn't really see that. Mark Sanchez drove it downfield, got a touchdown. Granted, their offensive line did seem to be giving up quite a bit of pressure, and the touchdown pass he made was just a dumbfounding broken coverage in the back of the end zone to Thomas. And he then followed it up with a really bad interception. So, I mean, I feel like we didn't really learn much from Mark Sanchez, but the ending score of 22-0 is not going to, definitely not going to hamper those who say that even bad quarterback play is enough to get Denver back to where they used to be. But Tom, give us the Bears' perspective on this.
Well, that was the first time they've been shut out in the preseason since like 1984. So obviously not a great, not a great game in that respect. Totally agree with you from Denver's point of view. Actually, I thought Sanchez looked kind of sharp. The interception was a tough play. Bryce Callahan came off of his man to – it was a nice play on the part of the cornerback to tip the ball up in the air and for the ball to be intercepted. Trevor Siemian wasn't quite as sharp as Sanchez, I didn't think, but he is definitely more athletic. He had a nice play, got out of the pocket and completed a pass to get the Broncos into field goal range at the end of the second half. I was impressed. I think it's still a dead heat between those guys. Paxton Lynch played the whole second half. I'm not going to say he was great, but he certainly has a cannon for an arm. And he looked like he belonged. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't awful by any stretch of the imagination. And I think he's just a rookie, still learning, but he looked like he's on his way. On the Bears side, as you mentioned, I did think they got some pressure, which was good. Unfortunately, all the weaknesses that people have been identifying about them since training camp began pretty much turned out to be a reality. The defensive backs couldn't cover, which meant the pass rush didn't get there. So although they got some pressure on Sanchez and Siemian, they didn't stop anything. And Jay Cutler obviously doesn't trust the offensive line. He doesn't trust many people anyway. It turns out that he has some reason in this case. The offensive line wasn't good, and the Broncos threw some blitzes at them that they obviously weren't ready for. Between those two things, it was a pretty dismal game for the offense. The starting offensive line, I think there's a hope there. You know, their center just went down, and the replacement, Ted Larson, only had a couple practices to get ready for the game. And hopefully that position will solidify, and that'll solidify the rest of the line. And they'll run the ball better than the 1.8 yards per carry that they ran when the starters were in there. The backup offensive line is abysmal. They have no depth whatsoever. And they are trying to sign some free agents to patch that up. I have very little confidence that is going to fix it. And if they lose anybody in terms of their frontline starters, they're in deep trouble. They have no depth whatsoever. And that can be said for a lot of positions on this team. In the end, I don't think their starting lineup's going to be that bad, but I think the lack of depth at most of the positions is probably going to kill them before it's all over.
Well, and just having a shaky offensive line against this Denver team is just a recipe for disaster. I mean, I would say, having watched, you know, the first quarter of the game, that the Bears starting O-line was worse than not good. You know, again, this is a Super Bowl winning defense. Our Broncos superfan Lewis sent in his thoughts, just said that that real quick, that basically his quarterback play was, you know, like none of them really separated from one another, but it was overall pretty solid. He's worried about their offensive line. He's saying that there's a lot of players that were hurt but didn't play, but the offensive line is going to be the foundation of how their offense operates, particularly because I think they want to lean on the run if they can. He also was concerned at how many penalties were committed. He said it was a very sloppy game, and Denver was very penalized last season, and they have to play more of a clean game. They by far led the league in unnecessary roughness penalties, I think, last year, and fines. I remember late last year they had racked up over $1 million in individual player fines for unnecessary roughness. So, yeah, Denver's still Denver.
Akeem Tlaib didn't even play. I mean, what happens when he gets on the field?
Yeah. Once he's healed his bullet wound, I'm sure he's going to be playing with real gentlemanly concern for the rules of the game.
I was going to say, too, on the Sanchez touchdown play, and maybe it's just that, I mean, the play was so busted that, you know, DT was wide open, that you just kind of double clutch or something to try to, like, make sure you don't miss a wide open player. But it was still kind of an underthrown pass, you know, like if there had been any kind of a defense back there. I'm not a believer in the Sanchez just yet. So before, I know it's just the preseason, we'll see what happens. But I just, I'm still not convinced that those two quarterbacks are going to be enough to get this team back into where they're coming from last year, but we shall see.
Well, for our next game, and the Dolphins versus the Giants, I had a chance to speak quickly with our Giants superfan, Sam, and so we give you his thoughts right now. All right, well, I'm now joined by our New York Giants superfan, Sam, who watched the game, and I'm interested to get his take. I mean, obviously, the Giants held out some of their big players, but, you know, you're also, you know, playing against an interesting team as well with its own issues and its own change. So I'm interested to get your take. What did you see in this game?
You know, well, it was a classic Giants game. It started out really positively, and then by the end, you were convinced that the Giants can win a game ever again. What's been positive to me, at least, is that the first team offense and defense have been producing. You know, the defense, the first team defense, when they played those first two drives, Tannehill wasn't getting anything. Olivier Vernon had pressures. I'm going to butcher his name, but Owa Ojigbuzawa, I think that's how you pronounce it, had a sack. You know, the defensive line, which really should be the backbone of this defense, was impressive. And moving into the secondary linebackers, Jonathan Casillas, who looked much better in the preseason than he did at any time last season, can really step in and be, if he can really step in and be a middle linebacker, then a lot of the questions on this defense, you know, will have been answered. On the other side of the ball, after the big weather delay, Odell Beckham was kept out, which was, you know, kind of sad because every Giants fan loves seeing him. But, you know, I think we have to move on from Ryan Nassib. A couple of years ago, he was a first-round pick, but he hasn't really done much. He threw two interceptions. Neither was a particularly good pass. He got stripped and lost a fumble. So I think we're going to see them move on from Ryan Nassib in the near future, which, again, is not a real impact position, a backup quarterback behind Eli Manning. He's never missed a game, but, you know, the post-Eli Manning won't be Ryan Nassib and will probably be a new New York Giants quarterback.
Well, and I'm interested in your take on the running game and what you saw from that. Shane Breen only had one carry, but it was a nice one for 19 yards. How confident are you that the Giants are set up to, you know, to be able to have that other side to their offensive attack?
Yeah, that's the question. I don't know. I think that the Giants are mostly going to manufacture a run game through a short passing game. You know, dump offs to Shane Breen, to Paul Perkins. Those are guys who excel catching the ball out of the backfield. Paul Perkins did have a fumble, which was, you know, on a messed up handoff, so I don't know how much that can really translate into, like, you know, into his performance. But I don't think the running game is really going to be a strength. I think we're going to see a lot more short to intermediate passes to move the ball for the Giants team this upcoming season.
The Dolphins starter, Ryan Tannehill, he did almost nothing in the game, but his, what I assume is his direct backup in terms of Matt Moore, I mean, he got a lot of time to play. He looks okay. Are you envious at all of the Dolphins' backup situation, and what are your thoughts in general on how they played today?
You know, the Dolphins did what they were supposed to do against the Giants' backup, and this has been a problem with the Giants for the past 2 years, is that, you know, they're starting 11 on both sides of the ball aren't that bad, but over the course of the game, when they get tired, they bring in those backups, and those backups just give up yards at will. So, you know, I don't think we're going to learn anything new about Matt Moore at this part of his career. I think he's about a replacement player quarterback, probably even a bit worse. So, you know, are you confident that Matt Moore is your backup? No. Is he better than Ryan Nassib? Probably. But if either of those guys are starting for your team, you don't really have a shot this season.
And so what are you looking forward to most for the next preseason game in terms of guys that you didn't get quite enough of a chance to see or something like that, going a bit more?
Yeah, I would like to see, you know, more Sterling Shepard. I really want to see what he could do with Eli Manning more than Ryan Nassib. I think Eli Manning's he's definitely a better quarterback. Receivers like Sterling Shepard, where they're really, really dependent on their route running and timing with the quarterback, I think when you put him in there with the backup quarterback, they can look worse than they really are. He did have a beautiful catch down the sideline, and he left the game with an injury, so I'd really like to see him come back healthy, playing, and you know, getting more reps. I'd like to see Eli Apple also come back from injury. You know, those are things you never want to see. Luckily, those were two non-serious injuries. I think it's, you know, cramps or muscle strains, nothing that's going to keep them out for any extended period of time, but, you know, you still want to see them be healthy. And then, I guess, I just want to see more from the defense. You know, I want to see the pass rush really continue to get after the quarterback. And Ojukwuza, the second-year player at UCLA, we really could use him taking a step up this season.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us for your quick takes there. Hopefully you guys can stay healthier throughout the rest of the preseason games.
Yeah, two players down and so far. It's not been great, but at least it's been nothing too serious.
And now we're back with Tom, who's going to give us his breakdown of Detroit versus Pittsburgh.
This was a game that I think was really interesting. I really don't know what to make of the Lions this year. Most people don't think they're going to be very good. I'm not entirely sure. They did finish the year rather strong, and I really wanted to see this game, whether they were going to pick up where they left off or whether they were going to be as bad as everyone thinks. And the answer is somewhere in between, which isn't much of an answer, but what can I tell you? Their weak point last year was the offensive line. They invested three first-round picks now in that line over the last 5 years. And the latest one, Taylor Decker, had kind of a rough opening to his NFL career. He negated a first-down scramble with a holding penalty in the very first series. And then he blew a block that led James Harrison to get a strip sack on Matthew Stafford. So not a great start with him. I think that offensive line is going to be something that they're going to want to monitor. They had kind of a hard time with Pittsburgh. That's not surprising. Pittsburgh was pretty aggressive in terms of the blitz. They did get a lot of pressure on Matthew Stafford. That's really good for them. The bad news for Pittsburgh is that, you know, we've been hearing a lot of buzz and a lot of hype about Sammy Coates coming out of their camp. And unfortunately, he did not live up to the hype, at least what could be seen in this game. He fumbled twice and did not perform very well. Greg, our Pittsburgh supervan, not very happy with that. He's reasonably upset that Coates didn't show up and Darius Heyward-Bey did. Not quite sure what he has against Darius Heyward-Bey, but he had at least one good catch in the back of the end zone and did show up for this game, and Sammy Coates didn't. So if you're looking at that competition at the wide receiver spot, looks like Heyward-Bey sort of took a little bit of a lead for one preseason game anyway.
Good thing we did our dynasty draft 2 weeks ago.
Funny. Darius Heyward-Bey's catch was really nice. The way that he kind of got, he did the double toe tap to get it in the back of the end zone. It was nice. And I think, I know a lot of people associate Darius Heyward-Bey with a huge bust, but if he had been drafted in any other round, he would have just been like a really average NFL player. He's had a nice little career. He's played for however many years. You know, he makes a few plays here and there. He's definitely not a first round game changer, but he's had a nice little career. He shows up from time to time. It's always nice to see him in the box score, and that was a nice little highlight he had. Shout out to Raiders Nation.
I think Greg probably remembers those years with Oakland, and probably that's the reason why he didn't like the fact that Heyward-Bey flashed and Coates didn't. I think he probably doesn't trust Heyward-Bey all that much. And I think you're probably right. I don't think it's entirely fair. If I remember right, he doesn't have great hands, or he didn't show great hands with Oakland. If I were a Pittsburgh fan, I definitely want to see that had improved. But other than that, he's a talent. I mean, you know, he could be a perfectly viable third receiver.
Well, and another guy who's definitely a talent, and I'm glad apparently still has a career with the Lions, is Dan Orlovsky, who greatly entertained me with his foot tapping in the back of the end zone as he scrambled for a safety a few years back.
he's still around.
Still there. It's better to drag your feet when it's not your own end zone. But anyways, we now move on to Minnesota and Cincinnati. And as you were monitoring your division like a hawk, looking for any signs of weakness, Tom, this was a game that you watched. I'm interested in what you think, because the Vikings are a bit of a lightning rod within the Next Fan Up Superfan community here. Pod hates them for inexplicable reasons. I'm a bit down on them, but a lot of the other NFC North fans, they see some real worrisome signs of greatness out of the Minnesota Vikings. What did you see in this game?
I am one of those people that likes Minnesota, but I believe it or not, I don't like them as much as I did last year. I was a year early on them, apparently. Now, having said that, I was not overly impressed with them this game. They had a tough time stopping Cincinnati. Andy Dalton looked sharp, and the Bengals came out and executed really well. And I think they should be pretty happy. I know Simon, our Bengals super fan, is he wishes that they had finished a little bit better. He thinks that they left some points on the board. But personally, I thought they looked good. They executed really sharply for a first preseason game. Part of the reason for that, and this is Minnesota's weakness, and it looks like, despite the fact that they've invested in their offensive line, it's going to continue to be a weakness. Cincinnati dominated the line of scrimmage. I mean, they really did. The Vikings had a tough time protecting Teddy Bridgewater. Cincinnati just, I mean, there were some plays where they just looked like they were going through them like a hot knife through butter. The Minnesota offensive line was really getting overpowered. And probably what's worse, the Minnesota defensive line was getting overpowered too. And that's not something you want to see, because supposedly, you know, the defense is the heart of the Minnesota team. And those defensive linemen were really getting pushed back into the linebackers. And Cincinnati was running the ball really well. This was not a good game for the Vikings. You know, if you're going to claim that you're ready to compete with the big boys and you know, maybe even, you know, in some people's minds, go to the Super Bowl, you're going to have to show better than this against good teams. This was my problem with them last year. They beat the teams they were supposed to beat, but whenever they played anybody that was definitively really good, you know, like a top NFC team, they did not show well, or they had a bad habit of not showing well. Unfortunately, I saw a continuation of that in this game. Again, first preseason game, don't want to make too much of it, but it does worry me that they look an awful lot like they did late last season. I did have one good thing to say about the Vikings. Their defensive backs look good. Historically, that has not been a strength for that team, but lately it has. And I thought Trey Waynes looked particularly good in this game, and Anton Exum, the safety, had a good performance as well. Had some good pass defenses.
The talk out of camp for Minnesota as well is that Stephon Diggs is having a really good camp. They're hoping that with the rookie that they brought in, he can kind of find that magic touch that he and Teddy Two Gloves had his first season. So, I don't know. The Vikings have got a little bit of hope going into this season with their offensive firepower. I think it all, as it has for the last 12 years, kind of depends on how much Adrian Peterson can carry them.
Yeah, I don't have the box score in front of me, but I don't think Diggs played. But you're right. I mean,
looks like he had one catch for 8 yards, but he's had a good camp. That's what everyone's talking about here in the land of 10,000 lakes.
Yeah, well, that's not too surprising. He's a pretty good receiver. Really surprised me last year. I won't say he came out of nowhere, but I didn't think he was that good. But he really showed himself. Well, he showed me.
Well, speaking of teams that showed you, a team that almost showed everybody with its first snap was the Cleveland Browns. I watched the beginning of this game just because I was curious what the RG3 Browns would look like, and they did not disappoint. It was perhaps the most Brownsian first quarter of football ever. So, you know, just to take us there. So, the Browns opened up with, I think it was like something like a 40 or 50 yard pass, RG3, to Terrell Pryor, the former quarterback, deep down the seam. Beautiful pass. It's what we've seen RG3 do a million times. They had just stalled out a Packers drive, you know, that was like long and grinding, and they made the same amount of yardage with a single pass. It was like, whoa, all right, this is the Browns. They then follow up that drive a couple plays later, and RG3 throws an interception on the goal line. Boom, done. All right, yeah. That's what we expect the Browns to do with their opportunities. But again, it was the interception was literally on the 6-inch mark. So the very next play, the Browns get a safety. All right, hey, points on the board. They're 2 points up. They took down, it was Starks behind the line. The Packers, they go down 2 points. They have to kick the punt back to the Browns, and they muff the punt. And the Packers then from there score a field goal to go up 3-2. And it's just like this is a microcosm of the Browns always. Like, great opportunity that they somehow destroy themselves without any help. But anyways, that was the most that I got out of this game. But I'm sure you're watching for opposition research on the Packers. So Tom, give us what happened the rest of the game.
Okay. You're right. Not a great start for them. I was really watching for Robert Griffin as much as anything else. I already know the Packers are good, and they were. They dominated the line of scrimmage. The only Eddie Lacy looked good, just like the hype says he should. They say he's lost weight, but believe me, he's still plenty big. And it looks to me like tackling him this year is going to be like trying to tackle a bowling ball. Really impressed with him. The only bad thing I have to say about the Packers is you don't want Joe Callahan starting at quarterback like he did this game, because Brett Huntley is apparently injured, and Aaron Rodgers obviously wasn't going to play. As far as Cleveland goes, I really wanted to see Robert Griffin play. And I was underwhelmed. I have to tell you, even the pass to Terrell Pryor wasn't really that great. Pryor had to go to the ground to catch that ball. And maybe more impressive to me was Pryor. He adjusted that ball in the air, had a couple of nice catches in this game. This is a guy that, you know, was a quarterback just a couple of years ago or 3 years ago. I don't think he played in 2014 at all. So, you know, he's in the second year, beginning the second year of a transition to wide receiver from quarterback. He looked I was skeptical of the reports out of camp that he was going to be a starter. He looked really good. And it was fairly obvious that Griffin favored both him and Gary Barnage. He was trying to get the ball to Barnage when he threw his interception, and that interception was deplorable. Griffin's accuracy has never been all that good, and it really needs work right now. He was really making a lot of these guys like Pryor and Barnage work to make catches that they really shouldn't have had to work that hard to make. I think that he's still got work to do. That's all I can really say. I understand he's never going to be Aaron Rodgers, but I tell you what, the earth's not moving under my feet watching him play. So I think that he's going to have to get better for Cleveland, or he's not going to be able to carry them. Brian, our Green Bay fan, had some comments. In particular, one thing he pointed out that I think is of interest if you're a Green Bay fan. They moved Clay Matthews back out to outside linebacker, and I think all of us were looking for them to do more at inside linebacker to fortify that position than they did in the offseason, given that that was the case. He said Martinez looked pretty good in coverage, but he had a bad missed tackle, and I think that the bottom line is that the inside linebackers were up and down. And that seems to be something that he thinks that needs to get better. The good news for them is their defensive line showed up, and I thought played really well. So maybe those linebackers are going to be able to be mediocre, and they'll still be okay.
All right. Well, speaking of former Raiders quarterbacks that are now playing wide receiver for the Browns, it's now time for us to look at current Raiders quarterbacks that may be in the future playing wide receiver for the Browns. And so, Monty, you were obviously watching your own game against the Cardinals. I also watch it for my own opposition research, but I'm more interested in what you saw there.
The first thing that jumped out was the preseason game. Derek Carr took a couple of shots early to Amari Cooper. One he caught, he just happened to be like 6 inches out of bounds. One he almost kind of alligator armed it, or I don't know if he lost it in the lights or something, but just a preseason game where you're like, you know, those guys are taking shots deep because they know Arizona like blitz. So I don't know, just kind of fun from that perspective to see those guys go deep. And I'm like, you know, all excited. I'm sitting down. I got my cocktail. I got a little bit of snacks. I'm in a good mood. Mario Edwards Jr. started the game. I wasn't expecting to see him. Carl Joseph, the first round pick, played the first series. So I think he's on pace to come back. Everything's going, you know, fairly well from a preseason standpoint. And then, like, the last thing you want to see, Mario Edwards gets, you know, helped off the field. He can't put any weight on his leg. They're calling it a hip injury. They're not going to release any additional information until they absolutely have to. But it's kind of the last thing that you wanted to see. So my biggest takeaways from my squad was, you know, that the two injuries I'm most concerned about look like they're on pace to come back. I know Mario Edwards has hurt his hip, but at least he was able to get on the field from his neck injury from last year. The only other real takeaway that I had, Crabtree looked good. The tight end, Clive Wolford, had a nice, easy play. The rookie, DeAndre Washington, who you probably heard us talk about last week, and he's, you know, coming up and all sorts. He's had, as advertised, he made a nice play out of the backfield as a receiver. He had a nice run, made a couple people miss. And so the comparisons that, you know, I think it's a pretty easy comparison with Jack Del Rio as the coach, is they're kind of comparing him to Maurice Jones-Drew. Definitely not as powerful, but just his stature, he kind of hides behind the bigger offensive lineman, and then he just makes his cut and then runs downfield. So definitely happy to see him. My takeaway from the Cardinals is, boy, if Carson Palmer goes down, they still don't have a good answer for a backup quarterback. I thought preseason, but I thought Drew Stanton looked terrible. He threw overthrew, just like, give me Nate Allen, had an interception, just floated on Stanton. It went right to him. He had another one that he dropped. He could have had another interception. It's just like Drew Stanton just was not very good. And even the Dr. June, Jones, Brian Jones, our Cardinals super fan, you know, he kind of nailed it. If Carson Palmer misses any significant time, this Cardinals offense and Bruce Arians offense is going to sputter. That being said, when Carson was in there that first series, he had a nice 30-yard pass to Michael Floyd. I mean, they drove the ball all the way down to inside the 5-yard line and then kind of sputtered out. But offense didn't really miss a beat. Their defense is good. They've got a tight end who Jones called out, who I also thought had a pretty good game. His name is Nick Lotz. He's just a big, he looks like a big, big, huge farm kid. But he had a nice couple plays. He had one player, he literally just threw the Raider defender off of him and kept on running down the field. It was kind of fun to watch. So, I don't know. It was a preseason game, whatever, but I don't know. There's a couple good things that I saw. The Raiders, longtime Raiders, if you ever watch NFL Network on those top 10 shows, there's a dude named George Atkinson who always chimes in when there's Raiders on the countdown. His kid is actually playing for the Raiders, trying to find a spot at running back. He had a nice little run, like a 50-yard touchdown run. I don't know if he's going to, you know, he'd be kind of third string or special teams or that sort of thing, practice squad, but I don't know. It's always kind of nice when, you know, once a Raider, always a Raider, when you see something like that, a guy's making a play in the preseason. So kind of pulling for him, as well as Terrell Pryor, the last quarterback that Al Davis ever drafted. So, yeah, it was kind of a fun little game, but curious to see how long this hip injury to Mario Edwards is going to be. And, you know, once the Raiders can kind of get firing on all cylinders, I'm expecting that offense to be good. Defense look good. Your boy Sean Smith had a nice couple of nice plays, Nick. I don't know how you felt about that. But defense, I'm definitely feeling a lot better about the Raiders' defense this year than it was last year. And I think the offense is going to be just as good as it was last year.
Yeah, the Sean Smith definitely gave me some flashbacks to when he was on the Chiefs, in that he had a ball thrown perfectly to him, hit him right in the hands, good defense, and of course he dropped it, because the only way Sean Smith ever intercepts anything is if you hand it to him and hold it in his hands for about 4 seconds. But yeah, I mean, you know, my only other takes on this, sort of surprised that Derek Carr and Amari Cooper didn't seem to be more on the same page, but this could just be, you know, preseason. I'm not going to take too much out of that. But, you know, talking about the Arizona, you know, quarterback depth, you know, Drew Stanton was 2 of 6 for 42 yards and an interception, 0 touchdowns. That was bad. I don't know what's worse, though. I mean, because Matt Barkley, who then played the rest of the game, you know, for the Cardinals, basically, he had 121 yards, no touchdowns, interception. But he was 8 of 24. I mean, so yeah, it's another one of those things. Somehow Bruce Arians got a lot of wins once Palmer was out in past seasons, but they really gotta, you know, be worried about Palmer's health and make sure he does not get touched in any way, shape, or form. The only other thing
that Drew Stanton, the quarterback in that playoff game when Carson went out, Drew Stanton started that playoff game for the Cardinals, right? And they got like 37 offensive yards that playoff game. Is that what I'm thinking of? And he looked just as bad. I mean, he had one interception, but he should have had two. I mean, he just, I don't know what's going on there. Cardinals are actually my Super Bowl pick from the NFC, and it all really hinges on the health of a shaky 38-year-old Carson Palmer. So let's go Justin Veldier. Let's keep him clean. Come on, buddy.
Well, that then brings us to our game, where the Chiefs look sharp, but we're going to throw it to the conversation that Justin, our Seahawks superfan, and I had just after the game, so we'll let you listen to that first. All right, and I am here with our Seattle Seahawks superfan, Justin. We are actually taping just after the game ended, which is why I may be a little bit more boozed than on a normal Sunday podcast, but anyways... just to recap the game, I mean, you know, obviously preseason games don't matter, and this was not a particularly exciting game for the most part. The Chiefs got a touchdown on the opening drive, and since then it was field goal city for the rest of the game until the Seahawks came back with a final drive through a Hail Mary pass for a touchdown as time clicked off, clicked down to zero. And so, I mean, that one touchdown would have tied the game if they would have gone for an extra point, but they went for a 2-point conversion and won the game on 0 seconds left. So, Justin, I know you're basking in this great victory. What were the other things that you saw that excited you in the game?
Yeah, I love that we're recording this right after the game. I mean, this is what they call in the business a hot take, so we're getting right to it. And yeah, that's probably a good spot to start is with that finish. You know, it was, let's be honest, even as super fans, a pretty boring game for the most part, especially when you get to that fourth quarter. A lot of these guys are going to be like begging groceries in a couple of months. So not that much interesting happening. But I will say that finish was fun. I don't think it matters what names are on the jerseys when you see a finish like that. It's always exciting to see this, like, basically a Hail Mary to a 2-point conversion. And there does seem to be a bit of a gentleman's agreement in the NFL that if you score a touchdown at the end of a preseason game, you go for two. You don't make everybody stick around for an extra quarter, which I think is the right move. And yep. So that sequence was a lot of fun. You know, I was pretty critical on Twitter and in the Slack group about Trayvon Boykin's performance throughout the game because I thought he was very underwhelming. You know, he was struggling really hard with the read option, getting the handoffs right. Seemed like he kept fighting with the running backs over the ball. And then his throws were not good. They were ill-advised. They were inaccurate. I was actually happy to see him leave the game and then come back. You know, kind of coming in suddenly off the bench is what a backup does. And he did a little bit better in the end and then had that really, really good sequence where they basically marched 70 yards in about three plays to score. So it was a really good finish for him, and I think he needed that.
Yeah, I mean, he was struggling. The Chiefs played five quarterbacks. None of them looked great. I mean, actually, Alex Smith had a very, you know, good drive. I mean, this is part of why the game was so boring, was just because both team starters were on there for such a short amount of time. Each one was basically just a drive. I mean, for the Chiefs, they started the game with really good field position because of a decent return and a penalty. And so, I mean, Alex Smith drove it down, you know, got a nice touchdown on the opening drive. And then that was all she wrote for him, Macklin, and a bunch of the Chiefs starters. In terms of the guys that I was watching, though, I mean, well, just first off, on the other quarterbacks, Foles looked competent, not great. Out of Tyler Bray and Aaron Murray, who are the guys that are both slated to potentially be cut, I think Murray had the better game. Bray just, I mean, there was a lot of drops, but also he just wasn't quite as accurate, wasn't quite as effective. Granted, he was also playing earlier in the game. He was playing in the first half. And other than that, you know, there wasn't a whole lot that surprised me in general. The Chiefs didn't get a whole lot of pass rush with the starters on the field, but also, I mean, they were causing some disruption. There wasn't nothing there. There's nothing that worries me knowing that Holly at least is going to be back, he's just been held out of practice because he's sort of the veteran treatment. Once he's back in the fold, I think the Chiefs are going to be able to have enough of a pass rush. And you know, also encouraging was, the defense sort of was bend but not break. They slowed down, and then Marcus Peters, you know, as I was saying, you know, I think defenses are just going to throw away from him for the rest of this game. And the one time, I think it was actually the only time that Russell Wilson threw at Marcus Peters, Peters intercepted it in the end zone, which ended that drive. So, you know, I think we both probably saw from our teams a lot of encouragement. They're both veteran teams, and, you know, this was, I think, what we would expect more or less in the regular season.
Yeah, I agree. I think we both saw exactly what we expected. Both teams had their offenses pretty much intact going against probably three quarters of the actual starting defenses and pretty effectively marched down the field. You know, Doug Baldwin looked completely unstoppable. You know, he's as explosive and as precise in his route running as he was last year. So that's really encouraging. You know, that played it to Marcus Peters. That was a great read by Marcus Peters to get in front of it. You know, if there's one thing that, you know, his Madden score should be turned all the way up to 99 on is taking the ball away. That's what he does best. So, you know, and it was an imperfect pass, kind of double clutch by Russell Wilson, kind of a rare unforced error. That's exactly what happens in this league against a top corner. So, you know, I'm not overly concerned about it. You know, your player kind of goofed, and then a top player on another team made a good play on it. Well, welcome to the NFL. I mean, that's how that works. Not a big deal. So I felt very, very good about that. The players I was really watching, though, were Boykin, who I already talked about. I was really, really excited to see Jermaine Ifedi, and I thought he did a really nice job. You know, he held up pretty well in pass protection. He got beat a little bit here and there, but, you know, he's a rookie in his first ever game. He was just a masher in the run game, though. I was really, really surprised by a guy who's that raw, was performing that well. And Justin Britt really surprised me. You know, he was a tackle 2 years ago, kind of flamed out and became a guard last year, kind of flamed out and became a center this year, and actually had a really effective game. I think the interior of the offensive line is actually going to be the strength of that unit this year, and I think it's just the tackle positions that are going to be a worry. So that's pretty encouraging. On top of that, on the defensive side of the ball, I really wanted to hear Frank Clark's name a lot, and I did. He was a disruptive force throughout the game. He got a lot of action, had a chance to really show off his skills, and he was excellent. And the name I didn't expect to hear as much was Cassius Marsh. He's a guy who's kind of competing for that Bruce Irvin role, plays a lot of defensive end on the passing downs, and was a very disruptive pass rusher. So, you know, on kind of both sides, there was some really good things out of the guys I was watching.
Yeah, and likewise on my side, I was a bit concerned about our offensive line against a stout defense like the Seahawks, and they only let up four QB hits throughout the game. Three. And four passes defense. But three QB hits and no sacks. So it was a clean sweep there, and even the depth seemed to do okay against the Seahawks defensive depth. Whereas the Chiefs defense was, you know, fairly disruptive against Chiefs depth players against the Seahawks offensive line depth. But again, there wasn't a whole lot of standouts. I was hoping to see a little bit more of Chris Jones, who was the top pick by the Chiefs in the top of the second round. He didn't really do much that drew a lot of attention. But again, all of the young corners that are going to be starting in some combination in the slot and the CB2 position opposite Marcus Peters looked decent, if not great. I'm not too worried about that anymore, but it's still something we'll be continuing to watch.
I think there's two things that we can kind of agree on in this game. Is that the starting offensive lines held up pretty well, but with Tamba Ali and Michael Bennett not playing, you have to take that with a bit of a grain of salt. And it was an absolute kick fest against two really, really terrific kickers. Stephen Hauschka was, I think it was 3 for 3 from around the 50. Like, I think it was a 50, a 52, and a 49. And then your dude Cairo, man, he was booming. He hit that 60-yarder that probably would have been good for him, 65-plus.
Yep, my man Cairo, he's going to continue to be the leading scorer for this team, I'm quite certain. All right, well, I'm glad we were able to get together right after the game. Any other parting shots before we move on to, regular season action? I don't think it's, I guess the next time that our teams will be playing each other will be in the Super Bowl.
If it goes the way Pod Vader predicted, that's exactly what we got coming. So if we have a rematch, I hope it ends the exact same way.
All right. Actually, you know, it would suck to lose, obviously, but if the Super Bowl ended exactly this way, you know, it would be historic enough that I could live with it, probably. And we're now back. And, of course, because I just have to throw in some extra thoughts, the only other things is I rewatched the tape of the starters this morning. And on review, I mean, actually, the Chiefs' offensive line was even, you know, slightly better than I even I noticed watching it live. So that's really encouraging for the Chiefs. And on the Seahawks side, a guy that, that Justin didn't mention in our previous conversation, they said he deserved a shout-out, was Kristen Michael, who, you know, he's been bouncing around, but, you know, he had a solid start for them. As the main starter, he went 7 carries, 44 yards, which is an average of 6.3. Now, you know, that's against, you know, like as we were saying, you know, both defenses were a little bit watered down given that they're missing some key starters, but who knows? You know, I'm sure fantasy folks are taking notice that he might be a legitimate bell cow for them. And next up on our list is Indianapolis and Buffalo. And I believe, Monty, you were taking a look at this game.
Yeah, I feel like a jerk. I think I snake bit our Buffalo Bills superfan, Rob. I think last Sunday I was giving him some grief about IKM. I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. I'm not going to. So IK, the linebacker who punched Geno Smith. He went down in this game, lost for the season. So before we start preseason week 2, it looks like the Buffalo Bills are down to their fourth string linebacker. So, I mean, that definitely sucks. And, you know, any smart mouth comment from my perspective is not going to help things out. So that's probably the biggest takeaway from this game. The Colts did not have Andrew Luck. Our Colts superfan said, you know, no surprise here, he's still a little nervous about that Colts offensive line. They haven't really proven that, you know, they can A, keep the franchise quarterback Andrew Luck healthy and on the field, but their running game was a little suspect last year too, so that's something that he's keeping an eye on. As far as the Buffalo is concerned, it looks like Tyrod Taylor signed his big deal. He played for one series, didn't do much, and they brought in the backup. EJ Manuel had a pretty efficient game. For the most part, it's really going to come down to whether or not that offense can get their running game going. Shady McCoy didn't get much work. Carlos Williams didn't get much work. They had the rookie come in and run it a few times. But this game was pretty quiet. Not much happened. Battle of field goals in the first half. And then some of the insurance salesmen put up a little bit of action in the second half.
All right. Well, one guy who doesn't appear to be set to be selling insurance for quite some time is Dak Prescott with Dallas. You know, it's been one of the major storylines, I guess you'd say, throughout the preseason, the offseason, is what happens if Dallas sees their starting quarterback Tony Romo go down for a serious amount of time. And apparently they were pushing hard for Nick Foles, who ended up with the Chiefs. But Dak Prescott, their rookie quarterback, put on quite a show. Tom, you were looking at this game.
I definitely was. And this was what stuck out to Brian, and it stuck out with me as well. So all three of us agree. That would have been my lead for on the Cowboys end is the fact that Dak Prescott looked pretty good. And Brian agrees with you that maybe the public freak out over not having a veteran backup is much ado about nothing. We'll wait and see. I mean, I wouldn't want to trust my season to somebody like that. But, you know, everybody says the same thing. You know, if your starter goes down, you're in trouble no matter what. And based upon one preseason game, it looks like Prescott would be about as good to replace Romo as anybody else. The other thing on the Cowboys, and it surprised me, maybe I missed something, but Ezekiel Elliott did not play this game. And apparently he was held out, which I think is really odd for a rookie running back. Usually you're trying to get those guys as many snaps as you can get them. So that you can better trust them to do things like protect the quarterback, get them to run with vision, things like that. you know, get him used to a pro-style game. I'm surprised they apparently, unless there's something I'm missing, gave him the veteran treatment and held him out. Not too sure I understand that very well. On Los Angeles' side, they had almost 90,000 people at the Coliseum for a preseason game. I believe that's a record. I don't expect that to happen again next year after they're 7-9. But you never know. And Jared Goff, everybody really wants to know how he did. He apparently struggled. His statistics weren't that good. He was 4 of 9 for 38 yards with interception. But the interception, I mean, he was getting hit as he threw it. And, he was 4 of 9, but he had 2 drop passes, too. So I think he probably performed. He did perform a little bit better than his stats indicate. The one thing I'll say about the Rams, and you can say this about them every year, boy, they hit hard. I mean, that is a rough team. And they put some pretty good licks on the Cowboys as well. That's one reason I like watching them. I mean, they're not ever going to be an offensive juggernaut, but they're a rough, tough team. They're physical, and this was a physical game. They came out and showed that again in their first game this year.
While you were talking, I tried to Google Ezekiel Elliott. It just turns out that he tweaked his hamstring in practice, so I think they're just being a little cautious. The other news that came up from this game, from my perspective, was the Los Angeles Rams. They're saying that the Rams are looking to extend Jeff Fisher and their GM, Les Snead. Is that who's out there?
That's correct.
I haven't watched any of Hard Knocks yet. It's actually piling up on the DVR. I might get into that later tonight, but I was a little bit surprised. I am low on the Rams this year. I know that defense is good. They fly around and they're fun to watch, but I'm just pretty, surprised that they're willing to, before the season even starts, lock those guys in a little bit longer. Now, granted, I think the owner is a billionaire. He could probably afford to pay a few people a few years while they're not on the roster, but just thought it was a little bit premature. I kind of figured that they would struggle a little bit to start this season, and then the hot seat talk for Mr. 8-8 would be all the rage, but apparently not so.
Yeah, Jeff Fisher is like coated with Teflon. I've never seen a guy with a better coaching reputation for having done less in my life. I am with you. I'm really surprised they're looking to extend both of those guys. And I don't know what that says about the way that franchise is being run. Because I think in the end, you have to sort of judge a guy based upon his results at some point. And the results haven't been all that great for quite a while now. I'm kind of surprised.
It's got to be something said for like continuity as they're moving to a new state, a new location. They're playing at the Coliseum while they're trying to build their new stadium. So maybe there's something to be said for just having someone who's been there for a while and knows everything. But I don't know. The NFL seems like a bottom line business, and 7-9 is not going to get it done when you invest $1.3 billion in a new stadium. So hopefully he can turn it around. I mean, he's definitely an interesting story. There's a lot of funny jokes and memes out there. So maybe he goes 9-7 this year, saves his job, and this is the turning point, the beginning of the Jeff Fisher era.
Well, he's a guy who certainly, to use an Andrew Brandt term, is winning the business of football. there's just no doubt about that. I mean, a team that may not be winning the business of football right now without their third overall pick in camp yet is the San Diego Chargers. And I watched the beginning of their game against the Tennessee Titans just to get a sense of where their offense was with a lot of these guys coming back from injury. And, I mean, despite the fact that their top rookie isn't around yet because he's still holding out, they looked like kind of what we've been kind of expecting the Chargers to look like. You know, fully healthy, fully loaded. Keenan Allen looked good. And Phillip Rivers continued to be efficient. Granted, this was against the Titans, who, you know, their defense is still, you know, not that great. I mean, it's kind of, I feel bad that Dick LeBeau has been presiding over this really, really, I don't know, this undermanned unit for a long time. I'm sure it's frustrating for him. But either way, I mean, the Chargers look like they're going to be back. They're going to continue to be a very effective offensive team under Phillip Rivers. Mr. Bolo Tie went 2 of 3 for 64 yards and a touchdown. Can't get much better for that for one series.
Still shot putting out the ball all over the field?
That's what he's doing. But on the other side, actually, the Titans probably on the whole in the first quarter were more impressive offensively. Mariota was getting some good passes out to Tajae Sharpe and DeMarco Murray, who everyone's pretty much written off. Granted, this is against a Chargers defense that ain't great, but his short time there was 6 carries, 93 yards, like 15.5 yards average, and a touchdown. One of the things that was interesting about the Titans was that for charity, they auctioned off the play calls for their first two plays of the season, I guess, of the preseason, and each one was like a 10 plus yard gainer. So apparently, these charitable these philanthropists really need to be brought in as offensive coordinators. If not, I have a feeling this team might go down the tubes.
Well, let me just be the first person. I'm looking at the box score right now that in fantasy football, start your running backs against the San Diego Chargers. It looks like both DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry had pretty good days. And if this is a sign for what's to come in 2016, I just want to get on the board earlier that, start your running backs against the Chargers. It looks like you're gonna see some success.
Yeah, you might want to start Melvin Gordon as well. He had a pretty good game, scored a touchdown. Guy had a very disappointing season last year. I was glad to see him looking reasonably good. I was high on him coming out of college, so I'd kind of like to see him do better this year.
That was my favorite tweet of the night, actually. Kenneth, the Chargers superfan. Excited to see a Melvin Gordon sighting. That was my favorite tweet of the night as I was trying to get caught up.
Yeah, Gordon did look decent. He had a really nice catch and run of, I think, something like 45 yards, maybe 50 yards for a touchdown. Ken, he did write in and said that he looked extremely fast, and he's pretty excited for him this season. He said defensively they looked horrible, but the starters only played two series and were not on the field for the DeMarco Murray's biggest run. He also commented that he doesn't think that Derrick Henry of the Titans looks right wearing a number 2 on his jersey. Well, sorry, Ken, I don't think you have much authority over that, or that it may or may not change. And that brings us to the final game of preseason week 1, which is actually going on while we're on the air. So we can't claim to have great knowledge of this, but looking at it now, it was the Houston Texans that prevailed 24-13 over the San Francisco 49ers. Not that those ending scores really mean much. The main point was that neither of the starting quarterbacks of either team looked great. Brock Osweiler came out fairly flat, went 4 for 7 for just 27 yards. He was sacked once. Blaine Gabbert went 4 of 10 for 63 yards. He did get a touchdown in that, but it appears that it was really the ground game that was getting them moving. I mean, Blaine Gabbert did run for 18 yards on 3 scrambles, so there's that.
I'm sure it's easier for running backs to make the adjustment, but it looks like Lamar Miller is getting comfortable in the Texans' backfield. He had 4 carries for 30 yards. He had a 14-yard run. So I know it didn't get much action because it's preseason week 1, and it's a lot easier for him than Brock Osweiler, but it's good to see Lamar Miller. He'll have a much better, he'll have the season we all kind of expected him to have in Miami if the Texans actually give him the ball rather than what Miami was trying to do last year.
Yeah, and another player that we were talking about fantasy sleepers last weekend was Vance McDonald, who he himself, for the 49ers, the tight end, he had 2 receptions for 54 yards and a touchdown. So, some of our talk from last week is being vindicated. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, go back and listen to it. Another guy we actually talked about was Quentin Patton with the 49ers. He was targeted twice and came up with 0 receptions. So, it's a bit of a wash.
One other thing to note about this game, Blaine Gabbert, I watched a little bit of the first quarter before we went on the air. He was very shaky in his start. And Colin Kaepernick didn't play because he had, quote, arm fatigue, unquote, which probably isn't going to help him, but I don't think Gabbard helped himself in his absence. He looked mighty shaky on his accuracy, in my opinion, and I doubt he impressed anyone a whole lot getting in there and playing in Kaepernick's absence.
So I'm not an expert, but is shoulder fatigue, is that a problem for a quarterback? Is that something we should be concerned with? Or
First I ever heard like,
it. Yeah, it just seems like, what? Like that, I don't know. I got no issues with Colin Kaepernick. I enjoyed watching him in that Super Bowl run that he had, and wish him all the best, but that just seems like a weird cop-out. I don't know what the end game is there, but the best thing you can do is get out there and get some reps in and some film out there and see what you can do.
He is coming off of off-season surgery, but I don't know how much that had to do with it. You know, he wasn't ready when they went to minicamp, and I think, you know, I don't know how far past rehab he is. I'm trying to cut the guy a little bit of slack. Maybe this, quote, arm fatigue, unquote, has something to do with that.
What if this is just rope-a-dope? What if he is just lighting it up in the portions of training camp that are not allowed by the media, and Chip Kelly is just, no? Is that, am I going a little?
Well, the way this game went, I would say he's probably laying in the weeds and letting Blaine Gabbert lose the position, and then he'll just take it, never having thrown a pass. He'll just let them look at Gabbert and go, yeah, we can't start that guy, so I guess we'll have to start Kaepernick.
All right. Well, that gets us through our week one preseason recaps. We hope you've enjoyed it. And if so, and even if not, we'd like you to go to iTunes and rate and review us. That's really important. It really helps other people find our show. You can also find all of our past shows archived at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. You can find us on Facebook, where all of our text recaps are going to be posted, and you'll find some other interaction going on there by just typing Next Fan Up into the search bar on Facebook. And as I mentioned before, we're pretty active on the Twitters, and if you want to interact with us, you can find us at the main Next Fan Up handle at NFU Podcast. You can find me at Clayton Nicholas. And what should they be throwing at you this week, there, Mont Sadius?
I would just follow at Nicholas, because I'll be sending all sorts of shade his way, so you'll be able to see me right there. Just jump on board as we continue to mock Nicholas and his trying to pilfer fans from other, just because of your close in proximity, you think you can steal old St. Louis Rams fans? Come on, man.
They're orphans, man. They don't belong to anybody. Their team loved them. But I know that Chicago Tom here is going to make his best plea to those fans as well. And he's got all sorts of content cooking. So for all those St. Louis fans that might be drawn towards the, getting in early on this very long-term Bears bandwagon project, where can they find all of that, Tom?
I am at Bearing the News, although they could follow you. You're right at the top of my Twitter list, and so they could find me in that list of tweets as well. I do have a blog. It's bearingthenews.com, and it's Bears news and NFL news. And I write for a Dolphins website called finmaniacs.com, and you can find me there as well.
Yeah, I also have to shout out that, although I haven't listened to it yet, our Dolphins superfan had an epic throwdown with the wife of former Dolphins cornerback Brent Grimes on the air today. And I believe that's Finn Broadcaster was his radio show, where you can find that.
Yeah, he's his Twitter is at Finn's Broadcaster, and with an F. And you can definitely find the link to the show there. I can't remember the name of the podcast offhand. I have not listened to the Miko Grimes podcast yet myself. But I have caught a lot of Twitter shade on it. So I know there's some good content in there that we're going to want to listen to.
Yeah, Twitter should be fun tomorrow morning at work.
It certainly was towards the end of the week when we were circling our wagons around our buddy Ron there. And I have a feeling this argument is going to continue. Anyways, check that out on Twitter and on the radio. It's epic. We're going to be posting links to that as well on all of our social media channels. And for all of our super fans, I believe there we have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
No, they were... Wait, never mind. I'm going to end up cutting this out. They fumbled themselves three times. This is a confusing chart.